The new Sub-Rector for Defense, Grace Lane Vata, climbed out of the official car that had appeared for her precisely at 6:42, marched up the five steps to the entrance of the annex, and through the tall door that was opened for her. "Turn right," McRobert had said, "and go to the leftmost security booth." As if she had been doing it for years, she placed her right palm on the plate and looked into the scanner. The tiny flash hardly registered.
"Both hands on the plate."
She turned and gave the sentry a frosty glance. He was already red-faced, staring at her arm bud in its casing.
"Anything else?"
"Sorry, ma'am. It's just we're supposed to..."
He opened the little wicket and let her through.
Third elevator, ma'am. Fifth floor."
Grace nodded without saying anything and walked through. She knew which elevator, which floor, which door. The other two elevators, she saw as she neared them, had plain metal doors. Hers had the rectory seal on an outer grill. She slid her key card through the slot. The grill swung open, blocking anyone else's passage, and the doors opened. Inside, the elevator was carpeted, walls as well as floor. The rear wall also displayed the rectory seal. Her shoes sank into the carpet.
Ridiculous. The former occupant deserved his demotion.
Five floors up, the hall to her office was also carpeted. A uniformed guard, some militia unit, she didn't yet know which, stood by her door. He saluted as she approached and flung open her door with a flourish.
"Sub-Rector Vada."
Through the open door, she saw five people lined up waiting. She walked through, giving a slight nod to the guard at the door.
"Good morning."
The five before her, three women and two men, were staff inherited from the former sub-rector. From their expressions, the carefully blank faces shown to those in authority, they expected to be fired. Some of them, no doubt, deserved to be. It was her responsibility to be sure that the second group and the first group were the same. All who survived the winnowing would be working for someone else. She didn't want anyone contaminated by the former sub-rector on her own staff. McRobert's dossiers on them had not revealed useful clues.
"We'll meet in the conference room."
She turned to the left. The most junior, Esmaila Ternan, scrambled to get up to the door before her and open it. Les Vaughn, the most senior, held the others back until she was through, then led them in as they arranged themselves around the polished teakwood table. Grace took the end seat, settling into the blue leather. Too soft, and the chair sagged back as if expecting her to lounge in it, as Selwyn had done. Selwyn wasn't lounging now. The bastard was awaiting execution, and there were no chairs in death row cells. Her assistants stood behind their chairs waiting. Grace let them wait a moment, then nodded.
"Be seated. We have work to do."
Vaughn had brought in a portfolio and started to open it. Grace held up her hand.
"Just a moment. I have seen your dossiers, of course, but I would like to speak with each of you before we begin the day's work."
"Certainly."
Vaughn opened his mouth to say more. Grace stopped that with a look.
"Your former boss is on death row."
Their faces stiffened. That had not yet been released to the press.
"You must realize that you, too, are being investigated thoroughly. Such a person will not have worked alone. If you were assisting him in his treason, you will be exposed and tried. Do not doubt it. If, on the other hand, you are innocent of any wrongdoing, you should have no concern for your employment."
At the far left end of the table, Armand Politzer's face had an unhealthy sheen.
"Surely you don't think..."
"I am not in charge of that investigation. What I think is of no importance to you. What you, any of you, did is all that matters. I believe the new chief of security is quite able to find out without my assistance."
The new chief of security, now relieved, perhaps permanently, from his duties at Space Force Academy, was happy as a terrier down a rat hole.
"Yes, ma'am."
Grace looked at Politzer with distaste. Innocent or guilty, and she would wager a considerable sum on his guilt, he was not a man she would choose to work with.
"Today I will review the current items and my predecessor's minutes on them. I'm lunching with the rector and the president at 1. I will require a 5-minute warning before it's time to leave if I become distracted.
She would not become distracted, but she could feign distraction and see what happened.
Yes, ma'am. In here, or...
In my office.
Rising from the deeply cushioned chair was awkward, but Grace made it up without lurching to one side, and the others scrambled out of their seats. Her private office had windows on 2 sides, looking out on the perfectly groomed lawns and flowering trees of Government Place. Her desk placed her badly, her back to a window, but this was not a time to show fear of assassination. Behind her desk was another lushly padded leather chair, this one even more tippy than the one in the conference room.
Did Selwyn spend all his time snoozing?
The desk was still arranged as he had left it, functions laid out for the use of both hands. She would have to reprogram it. But first, she found the icon for the chair. Indeed, it was set to full relax. She tapped the panel until it read full upright and leaned back cautiously. It held still. By the time she had the desktop reset, collapsing function so all could be accessed by her right hand, Vaughn was tapping at her door. He delivered a stack of hard copy.
The most current items are on top, Subrector. I wasn't sure how far back.
I'm not either. Selwyn appears to have been taking bribes from someone at least 2 years ago, so I've been informed.
Not least by Selwyn himself, sweating and shaking in the combined grip of the interrogation drugs and his own fear.
I don't have time to review all that at the moment. The rector tells me we have other more immediate crises. But I must know what Selwyn was doing in the past half year.
These cover only the past 4 weeks.
I'll get started then. Hold any calls. I'll check with you before lunch.
Grace glanced at the top memo.
Should I bring water or anything?
Grace did not lift her gaze from the papers.
No, I'm fine. I'll call if I need anything.
She could imagine what he thought as he quietly shut the door behind him. Silly old woman, appointed here because the new president knew he had to placate the Vata family. Probably didn't have a clue. Her reputation was decades behind her, unless he'd accessed certain files. She trusted MacRobert to find out if he had done that, in which case... well, to work. By midday, she had cleared the first stack of paperwork and asked for the next. Selwyn might have been up to mischief earlier, but the most recent action seemed to be more about setting up lunch, dinner, and weekend dates with various friends in the department or in other branches of government. Any wrongdoing would have taken place at those meetings, and the surveillance of those meetings was someone else's to analyze. At 12:45, she came out into the reception area. Vaughn looked up from his desk and stood immediately. A door was open to another room beyond, where Grace could see 2 women at desks. The third, she supposed, was taking an early lunch or off on an errand somewhere.
Subrector, I didn't know whether to interrupt you, but security took Armand Pelletier away a few minutes ago to help with their inquiries, they said.
She would have to install her own equipment somehow. She would have liked to watch that.
That's most unfortunate for him. One hopes he's not done anything rash.
Vaughn looked worried, as well he might. But nothing in his face or bearing suggested he felt guilty. Hard to imagine the senior assistant not being aware of Selwyn's corruption, but perhaps he felt no guilt because he approved.
I don't know anything, Subrector. Would you like me to call down and see if your car is waiting?
It was only a 10 or 15 minute walk, but protocol, and MacRobert, insisted that she be transported by official car. Grace bared her teeth in a formal smile.
Thank you, that will be appropriate. I'm not sure how long I will be with the rector and the president, and I have a medical appointment to follow. I will continue working on the same files when I return.
Yes, Subrector.
Grace switched her mind from office problems to the possibility of assassination on the way through the building, evaluating each component of her journey in those terms and deciding how to respond. When a junior clerk, a mere child, she seemed, all pink cheeks and bright eyes and a fluff of dark hair, flinched away from her in the lower corridor, Grace almost laughed. Much more fun to be perceived as dangerous than as a dotty old woman. More risky, too. But that was part of the fun. Nonetheless, as she climbed the pinkish steps of the presidential palace, she schooled herself back into the identity that had served her so well the past few decades. Elderly, surely infirm with that missing arm, perhaps a little set in her ways. She was almost giggling by the time she had passed through the various security checkpoints between the entrance and the small dining room where the new president and the rector of defense waited for her. At one glance, she knew they had already disagreed about something. The rector gave her a look thick with suspicion. The president came forward to greet her.
Grace, so glad you accepted the appointment. I believe you're just what we need in this difficult time.
I'm honored.
Grace wondered if her appointment was the problem. She had been told the rector was neutral about it, but the tension in the room didn't feel neutral.
Let's eat first.
The president waved Grace forward. Aaron Costanian, she reminded herself. 10 years her junior, he had bowed politely over her hand at any number of official functions, including the dedication of the new Vata headquarters. Colorless and boring, some said. A good administrator, others said. What mattered now was the perception that Costanian had stood aside from political wrangling for decades. Grace wondered. People did not rise to the top of the cream pitcher without intent. Lunch had been laid out on a buffet along one side. Sliced meats, shellfish on a bed of ice, dark and light breads, fruit. Two attendants stood by to pour tea or coffee or water. Grace noticed that no alcoholic beverage was on the buffet or offered. That was a difference from the former administration. For the duration of the meal, custom prevented discussing business. The rector asked the president if his daughter enjoyed her university courses, and the conversation stayed on families. Good news only, until the attendants removed the plates, laid out desserts on the buffet, and withdrew.
Donald and I have had several chats since I took office, so now I'd like your opinion. What do you see as our priorities in defense?
MacRobert had told her this president came to the point quickly. Grace had been thinking about this for days.
We must have answerable service. It's not just the isolation from the rest of human space, though that's hurting us economically as well as militarily. It's also a matter of communications within Space Force in our own system.
We need an ISC technical crew to work on the Ansibles. Without their permission and their skills...
Skills are replicable. I'm sure we have technical brains in government somewhere who could get an Ansible up and running.
But ISC... No one else is allowed to touch their precious Ansibles.
We can't ask their permission. But by the same token, they can't tell us no. I don't know why they haven't sent a repair crew, but the fact is, our security and our economy depend on communications. We can't be held hostage like this. What if another attack comes? Without Ansible service, we're limited to light-speed communications in our system, and our space fleets are hours out of touch with the planet.
But you know what they do to systems that touch their Ansibles or their personnel. We can't risk an ISC invasion.
I don't see that as likely. They must be suffering some kind of widespread emergency, or they'd have repaired our Ansible before now. After all, one of their ships left here to find out what had happened very shortly after our Ansible failed. If it were only a local problem, they could have contacted their headquarters by Ansible as soon as they reached the next system. And they've had time to go all the way to Nexus 2 and come back. That argues for some widespread trouble, perhaps much like ours. We must have communication. The only way to get it is to find out what's wrong with the Ansible and repair it.
We could send out our own scouts.
We could, if we wanted to weaken local defenses. If I weren't concerned about ISC's response, I'd back the subrector's suggestion, but...
We've been without Ansible service for almost a year. We have a legitimate complaint against ISC, for that matter.
Well, if you're willing to take responsibility...
She can't, Donald. Responsibility goes up, authority goes down. If I let her do it, it's on my head.
Grace looked at him, surprised. He had a reputation for honesty... But her long experience in undercover work gave her little reason to trust anyone in power. He looked back, lips pressed tight. Then he shrugged.
You're right, Grace. The economy's foundering without good communications for our out-system trade, and even our in-system trade. We have financial assets out of system that we can't use because we have no financial Ansible. Our defense is compromised when we can't get immediate response from our outlier platforms and ships. I'll authorize an attempt to repair the Ansible's both financial and general communications with the proviso that we advise ISC as soon as they're online, direct to their headquarters, what we did and why. Acceptable?
Acceptable.
I'll draft the order this afternoon. You have my verbal consent to start the operation.
The Rector looked sour but said nothing.
Donald, you know we need your expertise, but things have changed. If you can't work with us, I'll accept your resignation.
The Rector's round face had reddened. Grace looked at him, and it paled again. She wondered if the President would recognize what that meant, and whether it would matter to him.
I may find that the strains of the past few weeks have told on my heart. In that case,
I would not presume to place more burdens on you. Perhaps you should check with your physicians and let me know.
Yes, I'll do that.
And with a vicious glance at Grace, the Rector pushed away from the table and left the room. Grace bent to sip her tea.
Dear me.
That's going to cause trouble. I think perhaps you should return to the Annex.
By all means.
Grace wanted time alone to analyze what had just happened. And she would have time if she went straight to the Annex now, to dig into different files and see if she could determine why the Rector had chosen to leave, whether he had intended this from the beginning. She had an appointment that afternoon with her rehab team, an appointment she had rescheduled 3 times already. Her arm bud's sustaining capsule needed its fluids changed, her doctors insisted. She left the Annex shortly after 3, arriving at the clinic by 3:30, and found her doctor pacing the floor.
Oh, I was afraid you'd reschedule again, and that would not have been good for your arm.
It doesn't hurt.
It won't hurt until it's too late.
He nodded to one of the technicians, who inserted a fine needle through the cap and drew off a sample of fluid. In the analyzer, the fluid produced a series of colored blips, meaningless to Grace.
Just as I thought. Electrolytes are borderline. We'll start with the flush. Lie down here.
The flush itself was not unpleasant. Fluid ran out, as other fluid ran in. It felt a little cool. The arm bud looked as if it had grown a couple of centimeters. The doctor confirmed this.
It's growing normally, but you must make every scheduled visit. As growth accelerates, there's less margin for error in the chemical milieu. If you want to have a functional arm...
Of course I do.
Then you must cooperate, however busy your schedule. Remember... This is not normal embryonic and fetal development. Not only is it a graft onto an adult body, it's being pushed to develop faster in a less natural environment.
That would serve as a metaphor for her nieces, Grace thought. Grafted onto adult responsibilities and pushed to develop faster in a less natural environment. She hoped they were doing as well as her arm bud. When she finally got home that night, she found MacRobert waiting for her. He had said he might drop by, but wasn't sure. She was slightly alarmed at how glad she was to see him.
I thought you might be tired. How does soup and hot bread sound?
Grace slipped out of her shoes.
Oh, excellent. I'm going to get comfortable.
It'll be ready when you are.
Grace came back to find steaming bowls of soup on the table and hot bread wrapped in a towel. Custom or no custom, she could not resist telling him about her day, including the meeting with the Rector and President.
I don't know how to do this.
Oh, of course you do. You've been giving orders for ages.
Not that. It's finding out who knows what without doing it my way, the back doorway. I need to find reliable communications technicians who might be able to repair the Ansibles, and I don't even know whom to ask.
Well, you asked me. That's a good start.
That's another thing. This business of coming to you first. I haven't been dependent on a single source of information for years. It's not that I don't trust you. It's just habit.
And a very good habit. Just as my telling you you're an extraordinary woman is not flattery. We both know it's true. And we both know that this particular setup is stressful for you. Just not as stressful as being shut out. You're not comfortable working out of cover, and neither am I for that matter. I hadn't realized quite how much I depended on being the invisible, in my own way, senior NCO at the Academy, pulling strings from behind the scenes. You were behind two layers. Well, three, if I count the visual one of acting the batty old lady, which you do so well. How many people in Vada knew?
Two. They're both dead.
Grace pushed away the rage she still felt at the former president and his minions, and wished she still believed in an afterlife where an angry deity would torment them for eternity.
Now, fortunately, you're not. And we're both having to cope with coming out into the open where people know who we are and what our jobs are. But not everything.
Not everything? When there are people all around, all the time, watching everything I do, and no doubt logging it.
Not everything. An old spook like me isn't going to open up all the files, and neither are you. All we have to do is act the part.
So, you don't expect...
you to be totally dependent on me? No, no, of course not. In this case, though, I do have what you need. I know where the best techs are in Space Force, and they're almost certainly the best for this particular job. You won't know that one of the Space Force's clandestine activities was trying to devise an Ansible small enough to be carried aboard ship. We suspected that ISC had them. It explained their quick response to threats against the system, and we wanted them. We had a breakthrough shortly before your niece's little difficulty, and I actually sent her some components just to see what she'd do. She's quite good at tech when she puts her mind to it.
Grace wasn't that interested in Kai's former technical ability, but the implications of shipborne Ansibles were obvious.
Ansibles aboard ships? Do you think the ships that attacked us, that disrupted Ansible service, had those?
Might have, but they definitely weren't ISC. It's possible that someone else was on the same track. And you're right, we have to get ours back up.
And on our ships, if your research went that far.
The concept unfolded in her mind, opening out more and more, revealing infinite possibilities.
And trade! Ships could always stay in touch with headquarters, even if they were in systems without Ansibles. Do they work in FTL flight?
Not that we know of. Nothing works in FTL flight. Theory says the ship's in a sort of enclosed kernel. Nothing gets in, nothing gets out.
Too bad. That could be really handy. But how long do you think it'll take to get the system Ansibles up, assuming we find someone who can do it?
Days to weeks. We have to get someone there physically, and then it depends on what's wrong.
All right. Now for the big question.
Yes.
If the rector resigns and the president offers it to me, should I take it?
You? In charge of the entire Defense Department? The batty old lady? The auntie who makes fruitcake stuffed with diamonds?
Grace felt herself flushing. She wanted to kick him, but he was too far away. He grinned at her.
Our enemy should be very, very afraid.
You didn't really answer me.
Grace, I'd have to be crazy to tell you what to do. You'll make whatever decision seems right to you at the time. And it will be.
Eleven days later, MacRobert stopped by her office with the news.
They're back up. It was software after all. The apparent physical damage was all surface stuff for show.
ISC's own people sabotaged it?
I don't think so. I think they'd have done a better job of making it look like the main damage. This was mostly to impress flybys, I think, and our people also think it was done from space. Impossible to date it at this point, but I'd hazard a guess it was the same mission that took out your people on Corley. The software end was much more sophisticated, and I'd bet that it did come from somewhere within ISC, a long time before failure. At any rate, our people have both Ansibles back up, but not yet patched into the local networks or transmitting readiness. Yeah, they managed to block the automatic alert function. We wanted to test the waters, as it were. See what's happening before we broadcast anything.
You know, the president wanted immediate notification of ISC.
Yeah, he would. But this is safer. ISC isn't our enemy.
MacRobert smiled at her, the smile covering all that had happened in the intervening days. The former rector, citing reasons of health, had resigned. Grace, with only 3 days' experience as sub-rector, had been named acting rector. He knew what she most wanted to know, and she was determined not to ask.
Go on.
Well, you'd be interested to know that Vada Transport lists a new headquarters in the Moscow Confederation.
The idiot tree people? I was there once.
S. Vada, CEO, the listing says. They're running four ships. Katrine Lamont, Gary Tobai, Marcus Helene, and Mary Alice.
So, Kai decided to work for Stella. That surprises me.
She isn't listed as captain of any of those ships. However, the newsfeed mentions a Kai Vada who is apparently recruiting for an interstellar military force, who's on a ship called Vanguard that used to belong to, you won't believe this, one Osman Vada. One of our other privateers is with her.
Grace felt her heart stutter and then go on.
Kai took Osman? Osman Vada?
It says she's on a ship that used to be his. Who's Osman Vada?
Ugh, the worst piece of slime my family ever had to deal with. If she's got his ship, she had to kill him to get it.
Grace didn't want to imagine the circumstances that had brought Kai and Osman together, but someday she would have to hear how Kai had bested him. After all these years, that bastard was finally dead. Surely he was finally dead.
The news said she claimed the ship was hers by right, that it had been stolen. Is that true?
Oh, yes. The family threw him out, disinherited him. He snatched a ship, one of the new ones, just commissioned. Killed three people getting away, and that's not a tithe of what the man did in his time. And his children.
She stopped just in time. Even MacRobert didn't need to know about Osman's bastard children and what became of them, of the ones they could find. She hoped that secret would never come out.
There are rumors out of the Moscow Confederation. Apparently one of your captains challenged Kai's identity on the grounds she was really Osman's daughter.
Kai? Good gracious, no. I was there when she was born. She took after her father, after Jerry as he was in his youth, much more than her mother.
Now, news feeds always get things half wrong. You wouldn't have known of a Captain Furman, would you?
Furman? Stick in the mud, dull as lukewarm dishwater. He made a play for... who was it? Someone's daughter in the family. And she wasn't about to marry him, especially after he threw up on a carnival ride. When Kai went off on her apprentice voyage, he was a captain. They did not get along. No one really expected they would. Was he the one who challenged her identity? She hadn't changed that much, to my eyes.
Yeah, apparently. He was executed by the Moscow authorities on grounds of intractable rudeness in a court of law.
I wonder what got into him. He was always polite, unctuously so, the times I met him. Made my skin crawl. Well, I do need to get in touch with Stella, at least, and find out what she's up to.
As soon as we allow transmissions, whoever's out there will know the Ansible's up, and ISC will know someone else worked on it. On my end, we'd like to snoop a little longer, and Space Force would like time to rearrange the system defense.
How long is a little longer? Not just for me, but all the others who depend on interstellar trade.
3 days.
I suppose I can wait that long. Though, knowing my nieces, they can probably manage to get into trouble between now and then.
I suspect Kai is making trouble for someone else.
Power flowing through the circuitry of the main Ansible created, as power does, a magnetic field. And though the Ansible's automatic signal of availability did not come on, that magnetic field attracted a small, unimportant magnet on the Ansible platform's outer surface, making another connection, this one visual, completing a pattern that before had seemed to have a gap, a missing paint chip. Far away, the detector planted by ISC on a small chunk of space debris matched pattern to pattern every 6 hours. It had not been noticed by those who did the physical damage, and those who created the software problem knew of its existence, but not its location. Such detectors were installed in systems where the platforms had no resident crews. On its next cycle, it noted the completion of the pattern, stored that information, and attempted to communicate with the Ansible. When that proved unsuccessful, it launched a tiny messenger drone pre-programmed to reach ISC's regional headquarters and inform ISC that an Ansible out of service was now receiving power, but not operating normally. Space Force detected the drone on routine review of the day's surveillance. It had been too small to trigger an alarm at launch, and by the time it was discovered, it had long since gone into FTL flight. Grace initiated the Ansible call to Stella as soon as she'd figured out the temporal differential between Slaughter Key and Stella's reported location on Cascadia. If the idiot girl had moved, it would serve her right to be wakened in the middle of the night.
Vata Transport, how may we help you?
Grace Vata for Stella Vata. This is an Ansible call.
Just a moment.
I've got it, Jillian, thank you. And Grace, how lovely to hear from you. I didn't realize the Slaughter Key Ansible was back up.
Just now, dear. Of course, I had to call you first and tell you the good news.
Yes?
We laid the cornerstone of the new building. There have been some changes in government.
You should know. I've opened an office here. Well, you heard.
Yes, an excellent idea. Especially since you had communications, I gather.
Kai said I should. Aunt Grace, there's something I don't think you know about me.
Grace squeezed her eyes shut a moment. Stella had found out. She wondered how. With Osmond safely dead, according to report, there should have been no way.
There's almost nothing about you I don't know. If you're speaking of the past, that is. Everything in our, heritage was part of my brief.
A silence that seemed to stretch as long as the light years.
You knew.
Not that I thought it mattered. A few shared shreds of genetic material.
So I got to find out in open court, in front of everyone.
Stella had not imagined that. She wanted to know how, but this was a time to listen.
That must have been a shock.
A shock. Yes, you could call it that. All my life, I knew who I was. Stella, second daughter of Helen and Stavros Vata. Blonde, because mother's relatives were blonde. Now I'm Osman Vata's bastard.
No, you're Stella Vata. The Stella Vata whom everyone has always known. Helen thinks of you as her daughter.
Her adopted daughter?
Her daughter. And so did Stavros. Everything you know about your past is real, except for that one thing. Where the genes came from.
And you think that doesn't matter?
Not as much as most people think. Though your beauty probably came from your biological mother. I must admit, however, that the young Osman was a handsome beast. I mean both those words literally.
I can't believe... Damn it, Aunt Grace!
Stella, I'm sorry. It was a horrible way to find out. I did mention to your parents years ago that they might consider telling you about the adoption, but they were concerned to give you a solid background, as much security as they could.
Because they were afraid Osman's traits would come out in me. And they did.
Nonsense. Your fling with the gardener and all the rest of it had nothing to do with Osman. Do you know how many young people, boys and girls both, living in privilege, do something that stupid? And they aren't all Osman's bastards. Osman was cruel. You were just young and stupid.
Well, that's a comfort.
It should be, Stella. You aren't cruel. He is, was. And I really want to know how that happened.
No, you don't. It was horrible.
I'd expect it to be. Osman wouldn't go peacefully. Kai did it?
Yes. It's a long story, and I'd better start at the beginning.
Stella launched into it, starting with her discovery of Toby Vata in protective custody, traveling to Lastway, where she'd found Kai, the military escort, Kai's insistence on answering an apparent distress call from a Vata ship.
Oh, she's an idiot. Didn't she realize it could be a trap?
Yes, and the Mackenzie escort warned her as well, but she had her mind made up.
Stella continued with the threats, Kai's response, what had happened, in all the detail she could muster. Grace found herself wanting to grab both younger women and bash their heads together. Kai should have known better. Stella should have... But then in the end, she had taken Osman's ship, and he was dead. And that was the right outcome, even if the means had been incredibly risky.
She was covered with blood. It smelled... I don't want to remember that smell. Or the look in her eyes.
The look?
Ever seen a hawk mantling over its prey, Aunt Grace? Kai was trying to hide it, but she was... excited. Happy. She enjoyed killing Osman.
Grace was not surprised, but she didn't know how to explain this to Stella.
It shocked you.
I know, it's terrible. I can't bring myself to talk to her about it. It's why I thought she might be Osman's by-blow when Furman said she was.
And then you found out... how, by the way?
There was... tissue from Osman on the ship. Genetic analysis said I was very closely related to him and that he could not have been her father. And that Kai and I could not be first cousins.
Where is Kai now? Is she still on his ship?
Yes, but she's re-registered as the Vanguard. I talked to her only yesterday. She's somewhere way across space, a system called Adelaide.
Have you located other Vata ships? And what happened with Furman?
He's dead.
I know that, but why? What did he do?
Among other things, he lied to Vata for years, Aunt Grace. He was running some kind of scam. We still haven't got it all worked out. And Kai and I both suspect he was somehow connected to Osman.
Furman? He was lukewarm dishwater when I knew him. The only spark of emotional intensity he ever had, and I'm not sure it was real, was falling in love with that girl. I can't imagine Osman bothering with him any more than she did.
We think it was her turning him down that drove him to it. But there's evidence of a long-standing plan to sabotage the family, all while acting as one of our senior captains. He had secret accounts under false names all over the place. He was transporting unlisted cargo. I'll forward what we know to you. I've been too busy to follow up on most of it.
Grace felt stupid. She had never liked Furman, but she'd never suspected him of anything that bad. He was so efficient, she'd always been told. Always at the top of the list for on-time deliveries, with very low customer complaints. But now he was dead. Whatever she'd missed was over and done with.
So, what do you want me to do now, Aunt Grace? I've organized an office here, and for the purposes of doing business, we've called this Vada's headquarters. Nobody could contact Slaughter Key.
You did the right thing, Stella. And I suppose you're acting CEO?
Well, yes. Kai and I traded back and forth for a while, but she said I'd be better at it, and she wanted to take direct action against those responsible.
Eventually, you'll need to come back here, when the new building's finished. But for now, I think you're quite right to establish a headquarters where we still have ships. You've shown more initiative than the family remaining here.
Who's going to be the new real CEO?
You're doing the job. As far as my shares are concerned, you are.
Me? You can't be serious. I'm too young. I don't have the experience.
You're getting the experience. How many ships are reporting to you now?
Four. No, five. Galloway came in yesterday.
And you've re-established contact with insurers?
Yes. The rates have gone up, but I've insisted ours be no higher than others. However, two big companies have ceased operations.
That's understandable. The ships are carrying cargo?
Yes. Overall, trade is down, but we're finding routes that work.
How many employees do you have?
Besides security, just two in the office right now. The budget's still really tight.
Grace grinned to herself. Stella, for all her glamour, had always been a tightwad.
Part of that's the need to help Kai. I never realized how much even one missile cost, and she has more crew on one ship than three trade ships.
Then again, Stella had definitely learned about the right priorities if she was funding Kai's war. She was going to be a good CEO.
You remember that meeting right afterward, just before Jerry died? No one was making sense.
You were. And we were all in shock.
And too many of them still are. I hadn't realized the extent to which the Vatas with initiative and brains went off in ships, while the ones who stayed here, not the ones who went and came back, but the others, were timid and fog-headed.
Not Mother!
Helen's completely engaged in taking care of Joe's children. She's told me she wants nothing to do with the business. No, that's not being timid or fog-headed, but it's also no help. What I'm getting at is that nobody here has taken over.
But you. You have. And you're older. You should be CEO, at least for the transition.
I have other work now. And I don't mean my work for Varta. I'm in the government.
Grace almost hoped someone would intercept that message. Let the bad guys ponder the fact that Avata was not only alive and thriving, but had power.
You're doing a good job, Stella. I don't know anyone who could have done as well, let alone better. Count on me to back your decisions, if anyone has the gall to criticize.
I'd be honored to assist, Captain Varta. I told you we admire you excessively, and anything we can do to help, we are eager to do. You have only to ask.
It seems very crass, Captain Ransom, to mention so soon after meeting you, but we are short of missiles, and I've discovered that Adelaide has a supply of outdated missiles and the components to upgrade them. Unfortunately, our recent activities depleted my reserves.
Your generous aid to desperate refugees. I've heard how you ransomed them and asked for no return. It is entirely in keeping with your noble character. Please allow us to help. My funds are at your disposal.
Here. Kai showed him the figures.
Oh, that's no problem. Tis a paltry sum.
Kai just managed not to gape at that. She had grown up in a wealthy family, but the cost of 1,200 missiles didn't seem at all paltry to her.
Will you need assistance upgrading the missiles? I'm sure your crew is fully capable, but the task might go quicker with more help.
Kai could just imagine what her weapons officer and battery crews would say to strangers doing the upgrades.
I appreciate your generosity. But no, I have yet another favor to ask. Adelaide Group has given us permission to do some training in this system. Training exercises can make us vulnerable to anything that might show up unexpectedly. What I'd particularly like you to do is keep a close eye on Longscan, and assign one of your ships to observe our maneuvers, and at the end of each session, give us your observations. I realize that's a boring assignment for you, but as you said, your ships are not suited to mass engagements.
That would be delightful. It will suit our abilities, I'll tell the others. We'll start immediately. You will want us well out into the system, I'm sure. But wait. I need to transfer those funds. To Captain Varta, or,
Kailara Varta. My account's at Adelaide Central.
I'll do it immediately. Then we're off, flags flying and all that. Don't mind if we move about a bit. The lads get bored just hanging around in one spot. When do you think you'll depart?
We'll have to get those missiles loaded. I'm not sure. I'll give you a call.
I can't tell you how wonderful it is that we're going to be working together. Thank you.
Ransom bent over her hand and then was away, his cape flaring behind him. The funds transfer cleared within the hour. Kai put a hold on the missiles and components and went back to the ship.
Well, you look smug.
Do you want to send crew to pick up our missiles, or do you want them delivered?
You got them all?
Yes. I'm thinking 200 each to Argelos and Pettigrew. That will bring them up to 90%, and the rest for us.
I'd rather we had them all. You gave them more at Gretna, and now our percentage is a lot lower than theirs.
I could be convinced, but I need to keep our fellow captains happy.
An undersupplied flagship won't keep them happy. Vanguard's the most powerful ship. Missile tubes aren't worth diddly if you don't have missiles to put in them.
All right. We'll be selfish and keep them all. How long will it take to reconfigure them, do you think?
Won't know till we do one. Somewhere between a half hour and 3 hours each.
I hope it's nearer a half. Ransom offered help with that, but I thought we shouldn't have unknown hands tinkering with our ordnance. I gave him another task, watching for bogeys while we practice maneuvers, and critiquing us.
I like the first idea, but not the second. What do any of that bunch know about warship maneuvers?
If I told them to sit still and watch so they could learn, do you think they'd be willing? But if they think they're being asked to critique us, they'll pay attention.
You're right. That might work.
The rest of that shift and the next, crew and hired cargo haulers moved the missiles into Vanguard's docking bays. One by one, the missiles were upgraded, an average of 45 minutes per missile per tech. Six crew had the skills, but there was room for only four to work at one time. Kai let Hugh determine the most efficient use of their time and space. She needed to convince her other captains of the value of Ransom's Rangers. Argelo spoke first when they sat down to lunch in the Captain's Guild dining area.
I know why you're keeping all those missiles. I agree. You need them more, and we need you to be fully supplied. But this fellow Ransom and his schoolboy chums...
I think they'll be useful. I've told them to go out and keep watch while we do some training, and one of them will be watching us, supposedly to critique, but actually to learn something about multi-ship maneuvers.
I suppose it can't hurt.
We're understrength and vulnerable, you know that. Even with the supply ship Adelaide and the refugees gave us, we have only 3 warships, less than half what we had before. Ransom's 3 gives us at least 3 more sets of ears and eyes.
I just don't see him or those friends of his being much use in a real fight.
I'm not counting on them for that. They might surprise us, but even if they don't, the enemy may waste some time on them. It's an advantage, even if a tiny one. And they paid for the missiles.
Argelos's eyebrows went up.
All of them?
Yes, all of them. The one thing we know they have is money, and they're willing to spend it on us. I don't want to overdo it, but right now we are short, as you know. What we really need is system governments to chip in, but until that happens...
If it ever does.
It will. Though possibly not before we're random space dust. However, in the meantime, we need to make use of every economic opportunity, and it strikes me that this is an economic opportunity. They want to play, and they're willing to pay.
I see your point. It's fine with me, then. We still don't have enough munitions to waste any on target practice, though. Not until we're somewhere we can resupply.
I know. But we can work on calibrating our navigation systems, our scans, and using our communications devices. And I don't know about your ships, but my crew can use more drills on everything from inboard emergencies to boarding situations.
Yeah, we worked on that on the way here. But yes, what about EVA drills?
Certainly. I made a preliminary schedule. Preliminary because we're still upgrading and loading missiles, and also because I wanted your input.
She handed over the hard copies.
This looks good. My military advisor wanted to be sure there was practice in precision micro jumps. You've got that.
We're gonna look like idiots at some of this. But I notice you don't have any close formation practice.
With so few of us, we can't risk it. You'll find I've suggested close approaches, slowly, for the EVA work. But we can't fight in close formation, where a hull breach of one ship could take out the next. What we need to know is how to position ourselves in open formation to cover one another.
Makes sense.
And I have a surprise.
What's that?
Remember we'd planned to get ship patches for the new organization at Gretna? And some kind of official-looking seal for the gangways and such? I used some of the money Ransom gave me for that.
Kai signaled a waiter.
Here's the tag for my bag in the cloakroom. Please bring it.
When he returned and set the bag beside her chair, Kai opened it and pulled out 2 patches, handing one to each of the others.
You already have ship patches on your personnel. These can be sewn above them.
That was Bellinger's design, wasn't it?
Yes. All I did was add the lettering for Space Defense Force, 3rd Fleet. You like them?
Argelos fingered the one she had handed him.
Impressive. My crew will like it, too.
There are plaques for the ships as well. 3 for each ship at this time. One should go at the gangway, one on the bridge, and one wherever you think best.
Same design?
Not exactly. They were too big to bring with me. They're being delivered to your ships. I did tell Ransom about this, by the way.
Over the next few days, as the missile conversion went slowly forward, Kai noticed the new patches on the crews of all 3 ships as they went about the station. To her eye, they moved more confidently, more purposefully.
Captain, there's something on the onboard Ansible.
Kai rolled out of bed, her eyes sticky with fatigue. They had finally finished the missile conversions, but she had stayed up to supervise. The other captains knew that. No one should be calling her now. Stella looked as beautiful as ever, perfectly groomed and wide awake.
It's supposed to be first shift where you are. I checked. And this is a secure connection, by the way.
I've been up 2 days, and you couldn't have known.
trust Stella to use the onboard Ansible to chat, just because Kai had given her the new channel codes.
Trouble?
No, just some urgent business. You have news?
Slaughter Key's Ansible is back up. Have you noticed?
No, when did that happen?
Just a couple of days ago. Aunt Grace called me. She's in the government somehow. Defense Department.
That doesn't surprise me. What did she do, kill off all the traitors?
She didn't say that. And if she had, surely she'd be in jail.
Not our Aunt Gracie. She could have just fed them fruitcake with rocks in it or something. What else?
They've laid the cornerstone for the new VADA headquarters. She says it won't be ready for occupancy for a standard year or more, and I should just stay where I am. And Kai, she thinks I should be CEO. Permanently.
So do I.
But I told her I was too young.
And she said, don't be ridiculous, didn't she? I can just hear her saying that.
Something like that, yes. She thinks I'm doing well so far.
You're doing far better running the company than I am fighting a war. And much better than I'd do with the company. Are other Ansibles up? Did ISC say anything?
ISC didn't do the repairs on Slaughter Key's Ansible, Aunt Grace said. Slaughter Key Space Force did. So far, ISC hasn't said anything at all.
Kai rubbed her forehead with the heel of one hand, trying to wake all the way up.
They will. Especially if there's something seriously wrong in ISC. Speaking of that, have you had any messages from Rafe on Nexus? He was going to ask his father what was wrong.
Not a word. I haven't tried to contact him myself, either. He was going incognito. I didn't want to arouse any interest.
Oh, that's right. But ISC must have something dire going on internally. I'm glad we're not depending on them anymore. If they've really lost control of their people, and Rafe thought they had, at least some of them.
Which brings me to Toby's latest fit of genius. He's managed to create an interface between his version of the shipboard Ansibles and system Ansibles. And as near as he can tell, it's not detected by the system Ansibles.
What? That's impossible!
I'm beginning to think that with Toby, nothing technical is impossible. I know his talents were supposed to lie in space drives, but seeing what he's done with Ansible technology, I wonder if that doesn't mean he's going to invent an instantaneous space drive like 2 days ago or something.
Good heavens.
Kai realized that Hugh was looking at her oddly. Her face must show the astonishment she felt.
Of course, it means his mess is spread over half the apartment, as well as a sort of lab at the office here. And I keep telling him that the next time I step on something that crunches or goes sping under my foot, I'm going to throw it all out, but he knows I'm not serious. He thinks all this is fun. I have no idea how they contained all his energy back on his apprentice voyage. Scut work, I suppose. At any rate, it gives us an enormous trading advantage if we mount this technology on VADA ships.
And an economic advantage if we sell the units. How fast can you manufacture them?
At the moment, Toby's making each one by hand. I have three. This one in the office, two more at home. I don't have the capital yet to manufacture them in quantity, and if ISC finds out, I expect trouble.
Rafe knows we have the basic models. He said those conform to ISC designs, though he was sure they were being made by someone else. If Toby's advanced the technology, the least you should do is get patents on it.
I'm looking into that. Because the Moscow Confederation is so close to Nexus, though, they look with some suspicion on anything that might infringe on ISC territory.
Huh. Did ISC ever patent the shipboard Ansible technology?
They must have. They're not stupid. At least the components, if not the final product. And intellectual property lawyers cost an incredible amount. I've got one, but I'm running out of funds to pay him. I'm going to ask Aunt Grace.
No, wait! Just let me think.
Kai hadn't yet told Ransom about the shipboard Ansibles, and she had enough left to give him one for each of his ships. She'd planned to do so, in fact. But if he bought them... She gave Stella a quick outline of Ransom's Rangers and her agreement with them.
Give me a price! This is the old version, the ISC version, but...
But you're the only source except the pirates, Kai. One-of-a-kind items. Let's see... I need at least 50 hours of legal representation, divided by three, and a cushion you can bargain down from.
Stella named a sum that made Kai blink.
That much?
If we don't ask, we don't get it. We can try anyway. It's VADA trade goods, right? And you're a VADA captain. So that's the price I authorize you to sell at.
Actually, at this point, I'm the commander of a detachment of Space Defense Forces 3rd Fleet.
What is Space Defense Force? I never heard of it.
We have pretty patches and big fancy plaques hanging on the bulkheads.
And if I said I'd bet on the 1st and 2nd Fleets existing only in your fertile imagination?
And the imaginations of a few other people. But you'd be right, in principle. Nonetheless, I will sell the Ansibles at the price you recommend, boss. We need those patents, and then we need those advanced Ansibles. ISC will just have to eat our dust. Since they still haven't fixed all the Ansibles they've got, I'm betting they have enough other problems to worry about.
I hope so. Aunt Grace also mentioned that she's met your Master Sergeant MacRobert and approves of him. She said not to worry about your letter of mark.
With her and the government, of course not. We'll be on maneuvers here in Adelaide Group for a little while, Stella. I'll let you know how the sale of communications equipment goes.
Kai had consulted with Argelos and Pettigrew, making sure she fully understood the performance characteristics of their ships. Now the three set off for the first real training they'd done as a group since that disastrous battle. Right away, she noticed that the new patches made a big difference in both morale and discipline. Those who really didn't want to be in a space navy had already left, but the remaining civilians, former civilians now, had sewn on their patches eagerly and moved now with more decision. The other captains reported the same thing. It was 3 days before they had their scans calibrated to Kai's satisfaction.
I'm being picky for a reason. If I take a shot at someone with my beam, telling you the bearing of that beam, and you micro-jump 4 light minutes in front of me, and don't micro-jump out within 4 minutes because on your scan you think my beam's going to pass you a kilometer away, what will happen? And the same with missiles, to a degree. We're not doing close formation. We're going to be loose. That means we must know exactly, or at least consistently, from one ship to the other, where each ship is. Our navigational computers must be in sync. Our targeting computers must be in sync. Errors of thousandths of a degree quickly expand to tens of thousands of kilometers.
All right, I understand now.
It wouldn't have happened the way Admiral Andresen wanted us to fight. That's an advantage of the formations you were using. The disadvantages, you know.
When the equipment had all been calibrated, Kai had them practice precision maneuvers, first with only one ship at a time, accelerating on a mark, decelerating on a mark, while the others charted the movements and compared charts. Micro jumps to specific coordinates, repeated micro jumps or skip jumping. Shara's gift lacked the capability for calibrated and repeated micro jumps. Kai and Argelos rewrote tactical plans to allow for the problem. Then the ships maneuvered in pairs, matching velocity, matching course. Meanwhile, she ordered drills for the crews inside, including every emergency she or Hugh or Martin or the other captains could think of. Fires, leaks of all kinds, injuries, illness, damage from weapons. Every day ended with a critique session in which Argelos and Pettigrew came to Vanguard to give their report on the day's training activities, and Teddy Ransom, bright-eyed and eager, appeared on the vidscreen to give his version.
I've started my lads on some of those drills, Captain Varta. We always did have fire drills, of course, but I never thought of leaking coolant fluid. And it sent us all into a tizzy, I don't mind telling you. But we have it sorted out now. Not much you can't handle with gaffer's tape and a bent pin, you know.
Captain Argelos put his head in his hands.
I assume you're talking about ingenuity and initiative, not actually fixing a leak in a high-pressure line with gaffer's tape.
Oh, well, yes. Matter of fact, we don't even have any gaffer's tape aboard, and I'm not sure I've ever seen any. It's just an expression. Anyway, I thought you should know we aren't just sitting about with our feet up watching you work.
Excellent. Oh, by the way, I've got something I'd like to talk to you about, not on an open channel. I'm sure your people are looking, but just in case there's a pirate lurking somewhere...
Certainly, certainly. I'll just bring the skimmer over, shall I? Whenever you wish.
How about tomorrow, after the day's work is done? It won't take long. Perhaps an hour or so?
I'll be there, Captain Varta. And now,
Adieu.
Ransom waved as he closed the connection.
He is a total and complete idiot. What are you planning to do? Saw off the top of his head and pour in a sack of brains?
At least he started drilling his crew. He may not be entirely lacking in intelligence.
I want to sell him some shipboard ansibles.
You gave us ours free.
That was you. You had just escaped from an enemy that destroyed your home system. This is different. You weren't bragging about how much money you got away with. Ransom's thrown his around without restraint. I don't see why he shouldn't pay for them. Stella, my cousin who runs the business, suggested a price.
Should I know how much I'm beholden to you?
No, you aren't beholden to me at all, Dan.
Kai rarely used his given name. She noted his reaction. Surprise, first, then a subtle relaxation.
You saved my ship as much as I saved yours.
Thanks.
Teddy Ransom's a newcomer, and unknown, and for all I can tell, as rich as the entire Vada family used to be. He hasn't earned any special consideration yet, and Stella needs the money.
What's ISC gonna think of your selling shipboard ansibles?
I don't care. The ship and its contents were adjudicated to my possession. They certainly haven't advertised any as missing, so I don't think they'll claim they were stolen.
The others looked at her.
You're becoming devious.
Becoming?
And she seemed like such a nice girl when I first met her. So, when do you think we'll be ready to go chase down some pirates and get this war started? I'm sorry, finished.
Another few days. You're all shaping well. If we had the resources, I'd want some target practice, but we need every missile in stores. I will want your weapons crews using simulation patterns, though.
And where do we go next?
Talking to Counselor Malroy, I think we're most likely to get support from systems like this. Those that don't maintain much in the way of system defense, but are beginning to worry about the pirate menace. I'm also planning to send Ransom's ships out as scouts, a system or so ahead of us. With shipboard ansibles, they can report if they find any small groups of pirates, something we could reasonably hope to destroy. If we can prove that we can destroy small groups, that will get us some support. And more ships, I'll bet. But we really need a good, solid victory the next time out. The more Turek grabs, the more he'll have to spread his forces to maintain control. There will be small groups, I'm sure.
Sounds good to me. This is a bit different from what I'm used to, but I like it.
I'd like you to go out to a several light-minute distance, Dan, so I can demonstrate the ship's ansible to Ransom.
Captain Ransom's personal vehicle was as ornate as his ship, and he himself as resplendent as ever. He dove through the docking tube like some fantasy hero, right arm stretched out ahead.
It's such an honor. Your ship. And you have something important to tell me. I'm all ears, Captain Vata.
The general tone of his speech was so absurd that Kai had a momentary vision of 1,000 ears all over his uniform. She fought back a snort of laughter. This would never do.
Let's go to my office, Captain Ransom.
Oh, do call me Teddy. All my friends call me Teddy.
All right, Teddy. This way.
Once settled in her office, he seemed to relax a trifle, looking around the compartment.
I've been impressed by your performance. You and your friends have been a help to us, and I can see how you will continue to be. But there's additional technology that would make you more effective, and I can supply it.
What's that?
Shipborne ansibles.
That's impossible. They've always said it was impossible.
It's not. The pirates have them and are using them. It's one reason their attacks are so well coordinated. We obtained a number of the devices when I captured this ship.
Do they work just like system ansibles?
Not as I understand it. I'm not a specialist in the technology, but I have been told that they will not interface with system ansibles. It's strictly a ship-to-ship tool at this time, but a very effective one. The pirates use it. We must, too, to fight them.
Is it possible for me to obtain a unit?
Teddy, I'm sorry to say that I can't afford to give you one, but I can sell you one. In fact, I can sell you 3, one for each ship. Then you can communicate ship to ship without a time lag.
It seems incredible.
Come up to the bridge, I'll show you.
As they came through from the passage, Ransom looked around, by his expression impressed with the size and complexity of Vanguard's bridge.
Take a look at Longscan. That's Bassoon over there, see? What's the scan range say?
4.2 minutes. So scan lag's actually light minutes.
Yes. Now, let's light up the Ansible. We know what channels the pirates are using. We don't use the same ones, even though transmissions are supposed to go only to the designated node. Hugh, hail Bassoon.
Bassoon from Vanguard.
Bassoon's here.
Testing Bassoon. Confirm receipt of the following course data.
Confirmed receipt. Returning.
Kai glanced at Ransom. His mouth had dropped open. Now it snapped shut.
It really works! Ansibles on ships! Fantastic!
It really works, and I'm sure you can see the implications for military work.
Oh, yes! We can reach each other instantly! Anywhere! Well, except non-space and coordinate maneuvers! It's wonderful!
It would be more wonderful if we were the only ones to have it. But at least we do have it. The pirates no longer have a monopoly on ship-to-ship instantaneous communication. Now, you need to know the technical details, how much power it drains, and so forth. That will help you decide whether to purchase...
I want it. I don't care what it costs. If I have to refit my ships entirely, I want it. What fun it will be!
Kai handed over the hard copy she'd prepared.
Well, here are the specs. Do not, understand me, do not discuss any of this on conventional comm. Do you hear?
Oh, yes, of course.
Let your engineers look it over, decide if the ships need any modifications to handle the power drain, and then contact me again without mentioning anything openly. In fact, it might be better if we all went back to Adelaide for a final dinner party, say.
Ransom glanced at the specs.
Of course! Brilliant! I must have this, I must! It will work, I'm sure of it.
Back on Adelaide, with three of the remaining Ansibles stuffed into Ransom's ships, a job that had taken 2.5 days, Kai transferred almost all the credits to the Vata account at Cascadia, less the bank's fee for transfer. The small remainder paid for the dinner she hosted for the captains and senior crew. The next day, they would set off for what Ransom insisted was the adventure of a lifetime, and Kai hoped would be the next step toward victory.
Vada's War, Command Decision is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Christopher Sheeran, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Lily Beacon, Jeff Baker, Michael Glenn, Peter Stray, Andy Clements, Joe Brack, Mort Shelby, Eric Messner, Danny Gavigan, Karen Novak, Jeff Allen, Yasmin Twazon, Michael John Casey, Margie Tompros, Richard Rowan, Thomas Penny, Katie Foster, Tim Getman, Ken Jackson, Terrence Aselford, Casey Platt, Tim Carlin, Tony Nam, and Jonathan Watkins. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. If you enjoyed Vada's War, be sure to look for The Serrano Legacy, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Tyler Stern has rejected the assassin's life.
We've got a contract for you.
50,000 Gunders for one kill, Kyla. With that much, you can take Aline and Yuli anywhere. You'll have done the world a good turn, and you'll never have to work again. It's just one last job.
There's always one last job. I'm finished.
The God King's successful coup has left Kyler's master, Derzo Blint, dead and buried.
Oh, I've been having a little party, celebrating.
What are you celebrating?
Derzo Blint is dead!
Tired of it all, he is starting over. New city, new friends, and a new profession.
Kyla, there are always going to be people so bad that we think they deserve to die. I don't know. What I do know is what you've told me about what killing has done to your soul. No matter what good it seems to do for the world, it destroys you. I can't watch that, Kyla. I won't. I care about you too much.
All right. We should be able to leave in the morning.
But the beckoning will of the Shadow soon comes to call on Kyla once again.
Logan's alive. He's in the hall.
Logan's alive?
Every day, the chances that Logan will be discovered get worse.
You want me to break into the hole and save Logan?
I want you to rescue Logan. And then I want you to assassinate the God King.
Kyler is faced with an agonizing choice. Will he give up the Way of Shadows and live in peace? Or will he risk everything by taking on the ultimate hit?
Look at yourself! I know this hit is impossible. I'm sending you after a god. But if anyone in the world can do it, it's you. You were made for this, Kyler. Some things are bigger than your happiness. You can give hope to an entire nation.
It'll only cost me everything.
Will Kyler see the light when his world is shrouded in shadows? Find out in Shadow's Edge, the thrilling second part of the Night Angel trilogy. Available now in graphic audio.
It's good to have you back, my friend.
It's bad to be back.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.